my granddaughter wrote a song she titled, Let's Dream Magic. Let's all dream magic. Today, part two with Brad Keeney shares quite a bit about the timeless dreaming / mojo that affects our lives and with more and more awareness can lead us into extraordinary lives. All of Brad's books reflect this, and today we're talking about the flying drum. I'm Robin Clare. Stay tuned. This is Tributaries. You say the Bushmen hold all the spiritual ecology. What do you mean? And Jesus or Buddha, were they missing some of this ecology from what your understanding is or your non-point of view?
Well, you know, it's one of those things that nobody can really say. We just, and my saying these things are evocations, trying to, you know, create some movement so they're not final declarations.
Yes.
But the idea that the Bushmen hold, let's just say, the complete range of mysteries is a way of saying that in improvisation is held all the possibilities of form, because there's no attachment to any particular form. That means you can be informed in any particular moment, given how life wants to dance you.
Yes.
And when we look at the ways in which, they hold a relationship to mystery, there's no restraints. They're just about as wide open as, if you wish, unfiltered. But as soon as we create schools of thought and we begin to make definition and naming and explanatory schemas for how the spiritual world is organized, whether we do it as a Buddhist or as a Christian or whatever Zoroastrian, whatever form we're going to pose, we're now screening things, we're filtering things, we're looking at some things and not at others. So there was a greater freedom of and a greater range of experience in matters of relating to the sacred among people who did not have the filters, if that makes sense, minimal filters. And what filters they had, they allowed to change given whatever experience touched them. For us, we end up finding somebody has the charismatic experience, they get the direct hit. And then the followers write it all down a textbook. It's a sociological institution that basically, does what? It doesn't encourage people to have the experience. It encourages them to say the right answer, to have the right understanding from the textbooks that were inspired once upon a time by someone's experience.
The important piece is it's the self-help book or that type of experience really does almost insist that there's something to be developed.
Yes.
Instead of experienced or tuned or just to get in with the moment.
This is why all self-help books, for the most part, I'm going to assume there's an exception somewhere, are complete lies. They're just absolute lies, as most spiritual pop teachings are.
Right.
Because they assume there's a master key or an answer, or a 1, 2, 3, and if you own it, then everything goes your way. And this is complete nonsense, because the master key changes, it shapeshifts in every situation. The key needs to be different, just like a diet. There is no one diet, because you're always changing. So the diet that's right for you today is going to be different tomorrow and next week. It's shifting. You have to learn to listen to what needs to come forth in the moment. And so in this way, as William Blake said, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, but the lie is found in the generalization, and the truth is found in the particular. So that the marketeers who push the popular success books and pop spirituality, it's the biggest trickster con game ever, and it's as true today as it was a lie in the past.
Yeah, at one point, the Townsend newsletter for doctors and patients is, it's a very well thought out magazine and it serves its purpose in the world. But at one point, when it would come, it would just have folds and folds and folds of ads of all these supposedly natural supplements that were totally chemically processed. And in trying not to be one thing, you end up being the other, but kind of coming in again through the back door.
That's right. Right. Yeah, it's just, that's for sure. In the world of self-help psychology, any book you read or any therapist you meet or any healer you meet, make sure they're always changing. If you read a book and it doesn't change as you're reading, you don't feel the juice inside of it. Instead, it's just the same thing over and over again. Put it away.
Right, yes.
Because that's the stench of something that's dead. But if it's alive, when you read it, you're going to feel that it's alive, and it's probably going to be held by contradictions and a lot of play.
Yes. Well, speaking of therapists, we'll move on to discuss a little bit more through your book, The Flying Drum. And we didn't mention earlier in the first part with you that you are indeed a therapist yourself, and quite a wonderful one from what I can tell. But you are the president. What is your exact title for the Louisiana State?
I served as president of Louisiana Association for Marriage and Family Therapy, and I've founded several doctoral programs in universities across the country in psychotherapy, and I'm now endowed chair at a university and professor. But when I was, I accepted being president of the organization simply because I wanted to announce that all therapists I know just retire from what they're doing. I called actually for the end of it all, because I don't think that the pill pushing that's behind psychiatry and the diagnosing that's behind the fraudulent claims of psychology are good for people. They're toxic, and so I'm calling for therapists to burn their license and become traditional healers for modern times. So my partner Hillary and I run a little shop, which is not a shop; it's our home. We invite people to come to groups where we practice mojo doctoring. We use that metaphor as a playful tease on saying what we're not, even though we're both in academicians, both in the very informed in the world of psychotherapy. We teach therapists all over the world how to stop doing that, and instead to learn to listen to what's being called for in the moment to create something unique for people in their situation, as opposed to put them in a cookie-cutter method, whether it's Gestalt therapy or narrative therapy or NLP, you know, which treats everybody as if they're the same all the time. So you have to invent a brand-new orientation for every individual in the moment in which they're living.
Yes. In the intro to your book, The Flying Drum, you mention that you bridge ancient healing traditions with modern therapy. What would you say in 100 years from now will be relevant from modern therapy? Anything?
That's a good question. I actually think most of it is a mistake. It's nonsense. I mean, when we look at the history of healing traditions, we immediately have to recognize that psychotherapies of our last century are the newest folk healing tradition on the block. And we really haven't paid much attention to our elders. It's become infused with the worst of academia, social science, you know, with its agriculturous use of statistics, pretending that outcomes can be measured in any meaningful way. Let's go do outcome studies of clergymen and spiritual teachers and determine which particular, Bible verse transforms someone's life. Nobody would do that. Actually, they probably will. That's being like the Nielsen rating.
They'll get a grant, by golly.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, my mentor was Gregory Bateson. Other mentor was Heinz von Forster, and they were two of the fathers of complexity science. And, all this reductionist way of working with human beings is just toxic and plain stupid. And I basically would be happy to see all psychotherapy programs just stopped. I don't think they produce anyone that has any skills to help people. That's not to say that there aren't people who can help people, but it wasn't because of their education. Typically, what's taught is just formally ridiculous and informally toxic.
Well, that
say it the opposite.
That reductionism creates normal, which does not exist in any way, shape, or form. And then also, I think the system becomes arrogant.
Right, right. Well, yeah, the even normality is a spooky concept, isn't it? Who wants to be normal? That means predictable. And of course, that's what education teaches you, to have 100% exam, which doesn't mean you learned anything. It just means you're completely predictable. You've been completely trivialized. Now I can predict exactly how you would answer. You're an automaton like everyone else. But for the most part, all the psychotherapies, as Abraham Maslow once said, modeled themselves on what's wrong with people. They developed a pathological view that was overemphasized rather than what people could become. And Maslow said, why don't we look at the most interesting people who ever lived? He called them self-actualizers. Let's just call them interesting. The most interesting people whose lives were complex and fully alive and creative, let's look at them and let's use their lives as inspirations for how we can live. Instead, we look at people who are most rigidified and most habituated to being stuck in all kinds of uncomfortable ways and build theories of human behavior on that and then treat each other through that lens. So it sort of went mad from the very beginning. But that's not as important to say that, you know what, there's been many, many ways of helping people that are inspired by poetry, inspired by music, inspired by the heart, that when the heart's awakened and the spirit flows, when the bloom comes through you and you're feeling something and you get outside of the limitations of your conscious mind and you allow something bigger than you and bigger than your client to dance both of you, in that can be transformation, can be change, and can be an extraordinary tuning of the human spirit.
In your book, you talk about the various mojos that have come to you in your life. And why don't you tell us a story, and a very abbreviated version of the story of the flying drum, and what you mean by saying the drum has helped many without its presence even being known?
Yeah, that's a weird thing, isn't it? I mean, I'm a little embarrassed and not even sure, never will be, how to talk about this, but there are things that are just outside the box of our ability to explain or make sense of, and certainly for me, I've not been an anthropologist of the spirit. I've been someone who is more like Forrest Gump, just has ended up in all kinds of situations that involve tremendous opportunities for healing and spiritual wisdom, have just sort of been there at the right moment to experience things. And this includes the appearance of so-called magical objects. And even when I'm trying not to have any interest or even be responsive to them, they sometimes just sort of show up. And certainly the gee whizness of them is the least interesting part, gets us distracted. But on the other hand, the contribution of their presence is to remind us that there are mysteries far beyond the abilities of our mind to hold. And in this flying drum, I had actually been working in Africa for several months, was tired of living in a tent. I thought, I wish I could just get out of here and go to the Copenhagen Jazz Festival, because I'm a jazz pianist. That's my first love, actually. That's my spiritual teacher, is jazz piano. So I thought, that's it. I'm just going to take a plane. Did it. Went to Copenhagen. Going to enjoy the jazz festival. And the first day I wake up, of course, I'm feeling sort of weird. I think, oh, no, not a spiritual thing. I just really don't want any spiritual thing going on. But couldn't do anything about it. I just sort of felt strange and started just walking down a street and found a little shop below the street level. And I had the feeling I should knock on the door there, went inside, and found it was an extraordinary collection of Inuit art from East Greenland. And one thing led to another. And I found that I had dreamed the night before a dream that matched some of the story of what this shop owner had lived. And when he said, what do you do? I said, well, you know, I have this gig where, because for 10 years I had a gig where if I dreamed it, I was financed to go do it. So I would dream being in Japan with a traditional healer 1 month and then in the Amazon the next. And I just said this, blurted it out. And he said, you know, when I was young, I started to dream of addresses in Copenhagen, and I would just go to the address and say, I think you have something for me. And they would say, sure enough, we were thinking of selling this old artifact we had from East Greenland. That's how he built the shop. He dreamed all the objects and the addresses of the people who had them. And it was discovered that, he later said, that one of his ancestors had been the first explorer to East Greenland. On and on the story went. So it so happened that he said, come back, let's talk more. And I came back, and he gifted me with this extraordinary drum, which was a flying drum that had been once owned by one of the greatest shamans of the Arctic Circle. And when it was used in ceremony, it was reported that it flew, and in the same way that in ceremonies of our own continent, we know that when there are spirit calling ceremonies, people can feel that they're touched by the wings of an eagle, or they can hear the sounds of buffalo coming through the sweat lodge. It was, you know, in the domain of this kind of experience. So before I knew it, you know, I was the owner of this drum, and that, just another one of those little stories where something magical comes to your life and becomes a metaphor about mystery. And sure enough, you know, I find, after I received it, I had a clinical case with a little boy who was completely freaked out every time it began to rain. There wasn't any mystery why he would freak out, because he'd been in an automobile accident with his father and his grandparents, and they were killed, and it was during a rainstorm, and he heard thunder during that car accident. So now every day he watches the weather report to see if it's going to rain. He freaks out if it's going to rain. If he hears thunder, he gets so worked up his mom had to take him to the hospital, the emergency room. So remembering the drum and feeling its presence, and how thunder itself can be seen as drumming, even drumming of those who've gone on to the other side. So there are the angels drumming. There's the maybe daddy and grandparents are over there drumming. I taught him how to drum with the thunder, so that instead of being scared and frightened of a memory of what had resulted in loss and disconnection, his drumming with the thunder became a way of participating and renewing his relationship that never had to go away for his longing for his lost ones. So in that way, you know, these magical objects become metaphors, they become inspirations, they become reminders of how we can relate to the world in ways that don't necessarily have to perpetuate being a psychologist, figuring things out, and prescribing all the kind of stuff that schools teach you you're supposed to do, instead just to be inventive, improvisational, and allow life itself to weave its mystery through our interactions with one another so as to help us feel more alive.
Yes, well, you recount so many stories in the book, The Flying Drum, regarding your own personal experience with a dream and then an event in your life. And then the actual setup of the book is to recount how you were able to use that in a session to help other people. And just the way you wove that story right now was so great, because I asked you a question about you, and you did that for a moment, but then you brought it into the all and through an individual.
It is it's been a weird life I've lived, because I really just wanted to be a jazz pianist. And I was, I won the International Science Fair and went to MIT, but I had a series of spiritual experiences and never ended up being what I wanted to be, which is just playing jazz and concerts, and figuring out cybernetics of cybernetics. And instead had all these crazy mystical spiritual experiences, and had a patron who for over a decade I left the university and traveled the world and met many spiritual teachers and healers and practitioners. And now that I'm old, I found I've become a traditional healer, and with my partner Hillary, she and I do it. And what's beautiful is that in the practice, we now bring everything into it, including music. So I work with people with a keyboard. So when I talk to people, we all sort of go into a state of mind that enables us to say things with a little bit of music underneath it, so that there's jazz, blues, gospel, whatever needs to come up, all happening as we weave words, stories, and work in the interaction with someone whose life will inspire all of us to experience and be touched by mystery. So all these crazy experiences of being around the world, finding magical objects, and all the academic work that I participated in, my knowing how clearly psychotherapy is a dead end. And by that I mean all of it, social work, psychology, counseling, all of it. Not to say there are people. All people in it are messed up, because in spite of all of that nonsense, they're still good people.
Yes, so, and a lot of healing does take place.
A lot of healing still takes place in spite of it. But it's time for us to find traditional healers for modern times. And that's really our mission. We spend most of our time teaching therapists, the people in the mental health profession, how to awaken their hearts and to move into a wider range of encounter with people who come to them with suffering. And we also see people, who are seeking help for their own lives. And we do it in the French Quarter of New Orleans, which is a very fascinating place filled with all kinds of wonderful metaphors and contradictions that include soul, include music, include jazz, and that's sort of what we're up to.
Yeah,
you can sort of check all that out at mojodoctors.com. I mean, that's where I know we want to mention that. If you want to know more about our work or our crazy story, mojodoctors, plural, .com.
Is it D-O-C-T-O-R-S or D-R-S?
D-O-C-T-O-R-S, mojodoctors.com. Oh. And so you can sort of see opportunities that we provide there.
Yes, I know oftentimes I hear people speaking, they'll go down to New Orleans for Jazz Fest, and they just say, oh, it's really an eating festival, and there's great background music.
Right.
So the tastes come in all form.
Yeah, that's right. You go there for the jazz, but you find it's really the food. You go there for the food, you really find it's what? It's the soul. So it's the soul in the food, it's the soul in the jazz, and now we're offering soul in the mojo, which is to say, let's take your life and introduce it to the way in which soulful, heartfelt life force can surge through you and move you to find that you don't have to stay stuck where you might think you are, but you can move to be anything that life cares to play you to be.
Yes. There are many mojo objects that you talk about in your book. And
you love those mojo objects, don't you?
Well, you know, I would say I feel like they don't really need to be there.
They don't.
And
no,
I mean, that's
really
where
don't.
I come from. So I guess the love you were picking up was like, I want to sort of pick a mojo bone with you here.
Yeah. No, it's not necessary. There's the ideas, objects, ideas about objects. They're there, and they inspire in the moment. But to give them any permanent importance or to attach yourself to saying they're necessary, no, this misses the whole point. That's sort of a fascinating joke that life played on me. If there's anyone who doesn't want to have an encounter with anything like that, would be me. At the same time, it comes smack into my face. In so many traditions, one experience after another, there I am going, okay, there's something going on, and how do we hold it, and how do we benefit from the realization that there are these exceptional exceptions of things that we can sort of trivialize by calling them magic, or we can elevate by saying they're just mysteries beyond our comprehension. But then we have to say it's not that we're looking for anything in the world that has power, because that's a seduction, that's a trap. It's we want to go past it. We want to go past, yes, there are powerful things, powerful ideas. There are mantras. There are systems that will give you the sense that you have a little bit of an advantage of being in the world.
What gives that mojo the power? What is it? Would you say?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know that it's something in the realm of knowing. It certainly involves... that lazy word belief, but that doesn't say much, does it?
If someone doesn't believe in the bones that the Aborigines use, that a good shaman supposedly can use to kill somebody, it's like they're dead whether they believe it or not, aren't they? Sometimes.
Let me just say another example. One wonderful medicine man told me that it's not so much I make the rain, it's just that I just arrange to be in the right spot at the right time. But that's quite a trick, being in the right spot at the right time.
Yes.
It's like when you say, I can read your future, or I can tell these things about your past loved ones. You know, I can talk. Well, in fact, it could be that this is being given to you. As opposed to you're reading it. You're making something happen. You just happen to be lined up at the right time with everything, so that you're having no influence, no power whatsoever. It's just that you're in coordination, that you are collaborating with the universe in a cooperative way, so that you speak as it speaks, and all this kind of never-ending explanations that we can invent. But bottom line, it just comes down to love. And I don't mean love as a word. I don't mean love as something the mind's going to hold. I mean love as expressed through an awakened heart, which is to say that if our hearts are awakened, and they're not going to get awakened unless we're moving, shaking our booty, and we're feeling song going through our hearts, unless our heart is fully awakened, then our mind is not going to be its servant. Mind is supposed to dance inside a heart. Then when we read a sacred text, we're not reading it. We're not thinking, what does it mean? There's no understanding. We're being fed something holy. So if someone's heart's awakened and they opened up a sacred book, it's like they're receiving bread. They're receiving wine. But if you're in your head, then your heart just becomes, because everybody thinks they're in their heart, and everybody thinks they're about love, and everybody thinks they're about peace. But if it's from the holding of mind, then mind is going to just be trickster. It's going to be language making it mean whatever you intend for it to mean through conscious will, which is the stupidest part of you.
Right. Nothing wants to be caught.
Right. You know, as the Bushmen say, we have to waken the heart and have it rise. It has to get so large that it engulfs, contextualizes the whole of us. And, of course, that whole is a whole, and there never was a mind versus the heart. It's that when we separate them through the actions of language and trickster's mind, do we get into these kinds of traps and pretend that we can get things caught, including ourselves.
I have to say, one of the more technical terms you used was the gee-whizness of everything.
Yes.
I love that. You must still experience that. It's just waking up in the present moment is the real gee-whizness, isn't it?
On the one hand, we can find a way of being in the world where everything's enchanted and there's a lot of magic, and I call that the carnival of the spirit. And yes, it is all magical, and if you awaken spiritual eyes, you'll see in a way you've never seen before. But to think that our purpose is to just be amused by a spiritual circus is missing the greater participation in life. So to answer your question, yes, our work with our clients are just filled with all kinds of magical happenings and events for clients and ourselves, and we celebrate it, but we also want that to be merely an inspiration for fuller presence in the living of whatever arises in each and every day, not to be, let's become hunters or spiritual materialist, trying to, you know, have our baseball cards have high statistics about how many magical objects we own or how many great spiritual experiences we've collected, because that's just a distraction from the greatest experience of them all. We have to move, we have to make it a dynamic, because when we say let's be in the here and now, that's a dynamic, that's a flux, that's something moving. We have to be in the stream that's always moving. We have to be in the movement, the constant here and now movement that's always changing.
The book is The Flying Drum, guaranteed to get your mojo moving. MojoDoctors.com is where you can find Bradford Keeney. And for any guest information, to listen to archives, share resources, and sign up for weekly programming, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. And on iTunes Podcasting, Tributaries Radio. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.